Welcome to This Week in General Medicine. This week, we're covering 8 notable papers spanning oncology treatment and biomarkers, immune-mediated disease and infection, and the social and biological determinants of aging and child health. Let's dive in. We start with radiotherapy, where a large randomized trial in JAMA asked whether 5 treatment visits can replace 4 to 6 weeks of daily radiotherapy for localized prostate cancer. NRGGU-005, reported by Ellis and colleagues, randomized 698 men with intermediate risk disease across 136 centers to stereotactic body radiotherapy delivered in 5 fractions, or moderately hypofractionated intensity modulated radiotherapy over 20 to 28 fractions. The quality of life story favored the shorter course in parts. Urinary irritative and obstructive symptoms at 2 years were essentially identical between the arms, but bowel quality of life was better with stereotactic treatment, with roughly 35% versus 44% of patients reporting a meaningful decline. Urinary incontinence at 1 and 2 years and sexual function at 1 year also favored the shorter course, and serious genitourinary adverse events were less common, under 1% versus 2.5%. Crucially, though, the trial did not show that the shorter course was as good for cancer control. 3-year disease-free survival was 92% with the conventional hypofractionated approach and 89% with stereotactic radiotherapy, and the authors state plainly that stereotactic radiotherapy at this modest dose was not superior for disease-free survival. So for the general internist counseling a patient, the honest framing is a convenience and side effect trade-off against a numerically lower disease-free survival at 3 years, not a free win. 2 other oncology papers this week are about refining who benefits. In Nature, Cascone and colleagues report the biomarker analysis from CheckMate 77T in resectable non-small cell lung cancer, where perioperative nivolumab had already improved event-free survival. Among patients with evaluable circulating tumor DNA before and after neoadjuvant therapy, 2/3 of those treated with nivolumab cleared their circulating tumor DNA before surgery, compared with under 40% on placebo, and clearance tracked closely with pathological complete response. Patients who became molecular residual disease positive during adjuvant therapy all went on to recur, which is a striking signal even in small numbers. Benefit also appeared preserved in tumors carrying KEAP1, STK11, CDKN2A, or SMARCA4 alterations, with roughly a halving of event risk. This is still exploratory, based on fewer than half of randomized patients, but it points toward blood-based monitoring becoming part of perioperative lung cancer care. Alongside that, Nature Medicine publishes a single-arm phase 2 trial from Shao and colleagues testing ivonescimab, a bispecific antibody targeting both PD-1 and VEGF, with taxane chemotherapy as first-line treatment for advanced triple-negative breast cancer. In just 36 patients, the objective response rate was 80%, with 2 complete responses and no treatment-related deaths, though grade 3 or worse treatment-related events affected close to 60% of patients. It's an uncontrolled early-phase signal in a disease with few good options, and it needs randomized confirmation, but it's worth knowing as patients begin asking about bispecifics. Moving to immune-mediated disease and infection, The Lancet reports VIDIUP-1 and VIDIUP-2, 2 identically designed phase 3 trials of oral upadacitinib, 15 mg daily, in more than 600 adults and adolescents with non-segmental vitiligo, a condition for which no systemic therapy is currently approved. Passeron and colleagues found that at 48 weeks, about 1 in 5 patients on upadacitinib achieved at least a 50% reduction in total body vitiligo score versus roughly 1 in 16 on placebo, and around a quarter achieved 75% facial repigmentation versus under 1 in 10 on placebo. So the treatment effect is real and consistent across both trials, but most patients did not reach these thresholds, and repigmentation takes close to a year. Reassuringly, there were no adjudicated major cardiovascular events, no venous thromboembolism, no gastrointestinal perforations, and no opportunistic infections other than herpes zoster. Practically, this gives us a systemic option to discuss for extensive vitiligo, with realistic expectations about response rates and a need for prolonged therapy. Complementing this, Nature Reviews Disease Primers offers a comprehensive review of methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, reminding us that despite several newer anti-MRSA antibiotics, outcomes in invasive infection, bacteremia, pneumonia, osteomyelitis, and endocarditis remain poor, with frequent persistence and recurrence. The authors emphasize that the effectiveness of screening and decolonization depends heavily on local prevalence, which is a useful counter to the assumption that universal decolonization protocols travel well between settings. Our last theme is population health, and here two papers converge on aging from very different directions. In PLOS Medicine, Schrempf and colleagues compared functional aging in more than 8,000 English and 22,000 Canadian adults aged 50 to 85, using household wealth as the exposure and objective measures like gait speed, grip strength, chair stands, and lung function as outcomes. In both countries, lower wealth meant worse function and faster decline in mobility and activities of daily living, but the gradients were substantially steeper in England, where the gait speed gap between wealthiest and least wealthy corresponded to about 15 years of functioning lost at age 60, compared with about 9 years in Canada. Adjusting for chronic disease, weight, health behaviors, and social connections attenuated but did not eliminate the associations, which argues these gaps are not simply about smoking and body mass index. Women with the least wealth fared worse than men on mobility, activities of daily living, and hearing. From the biological side, Nature Medicine reports histological aging signatures built from more than 25,000 whole slide images across 40 tissue types, producing deep learning tissue clocks that correlate with telomere attrition and subclinical pathology, and can be estimated from blood transcriptomics to flag organ-specific age acceleration relevant to Alzheimer's disease, stroke, and Crohn's disease. This is discovery stage work with no clinical application yet, but it hints at a future where organ-specific aging becomes measurable. And on prevention in low-resource settings, The Lancet Global Health reports a 3-year follow-up of the COMIC trial in rural Pakistan, where Das and colleagues found that community mobilization plus collective conditional incentives left 88% of the sanitation facilities and just over half of the village committees still functioning, with sustained gains in sanitation and a borderline improvement in full immunization, though no difference in oral rehydration solution use. If you only have time for one paper this week, make it the JAMA Prostate Radiotherapy Trial. 5-fraction radiotherapy is being marketed to patients on convenience, and this is the trial that lets you have an evidence-based conversation about what is gained in bowel and urinary symptoms and what may be given up in disease control. Here are the key takeaways from this week in general medicine. First, in intermediate-risk prostate cancer, 5-fraction stereotactic radiotherapy improved bowel and urinary quality of life and reduced severe genitourinary toxicity, but was not superior for disease-free survival, so frame it as a trade-off. Second, oral upadacitinib is now supported by 2 phase 3 trials as the first credible systemic therapy for non-segmental vitiligo, with modest response rates at 48 weeks and no new safety signals. Third, circulating tumor DNA clearance before surgery is emerging as a meaningful marker of benefit from perioperative immunotherapy in resectable lung cancer. Fourth, MRSA outcomes in invasive infection remain poor despite new antibiotics, and decolonization strategies should be tailored to local epidemiology. And fifth, wealth-related inequalities in physical function are large, steeper in England than Canada, and not explained away by conventional risk factors. That's your roundup for this week in general medicine. The full transcript and references are available on the episode page in your Audio Scholar library. This is an AI-curated summary. For clinical decisions, always consult primary sources and current guidelines. See you next week. If this weekly briefing is useful, follow the show in your podcast app so new episodes arrive automatically. And a quick rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify helps other physicians discover the show. This is an automated summary generated by artificial intelligence, which can make mistakes. Always review the original source materials.